Welcome to yet another Thursday, and I hope this has been a good week for you and that you are ready for a fabulous weekend with so much to do in and around Florida's capital city. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. You are always invited and welcome to be a part of the action by giving us a call at 414-1234, the local number. Long distance is 800-926-8809. Email perspectives@wfsu.org or tweet us at WFSU Perspective. I'll be totally honest with you guys. My wife and I really enjoy antiques. We don't have enough money to buy a lot of them, but man, we like to look. So we were out just doing some browsing a couple weekends back, and at one local antique shop, I saw this beat up old handbill. The thing looked absolutely ancient, but the printing on it was unmistakable. It said, "Help wanted, no Irish need apply." And it turned out that particular sign dated back from the year 1915. It was a couple bucks. I picked it up and put it in a nice frame, and it's in our dining room now. And it's sort of like a ha-ha-hee-hee type of thing, right? But it was very emblematic of what was going on back then. There was a lot of xenophobia, a lot of pushback to immigrants coming in from places like Ireland. And then after that, certainly Southern Europe and the Slavic countries and all of that. And there was a lot of nastiness that was going on, a lot of different laws that were enacted on all levels to try to cope with that type of immigration, which many people who were already here in the United States thought was undesirable. And this just raged and raged on. So the discussion about immigration is really nothing new. The targets seem to change from age to age, but some of the basic underlying situations in people's minds that oppose folks coming in from other countries, whether they're taking our jobs or they won't speak our language, the things that you hear out there right now, this is just has been part of the American experience for a long, long time. But it has heated up so dramatically in recent years, given what has gone down with the presidential election. And even on the local and the state elections, we hear immigration policy debated. So we thought we'd have our own little discussion here on Perspectives about it today. There is a new group, a coalition, let's call it, that has come out called Forward U.S., and they believe that they have come up with a middle ground, a compromise, a way to move forward on the immigration issue. And we're going to talk about their thoughts and also get your thoughts on it today as well. So let's go around the table and meet our participants and also check in with a phone guest that we have today. We start on my left, your right on the radio, Sam Aguilar, who is Forward Florida organizer. Sam, good to have you, sir.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having us.
And where's home for you?
For me, home's Tampa, Florida.
Ah, okay. Well, welcome to Florida's beautiful capital city. And good thing that you're not down at the legislature right now. Otherwise, we might not see you for another 2 weeks. They're going pretty hard and fast. Right next to you is Cesar Hernandez, Forward Florida advocate. Cesar, good to see you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And from West Palm Beach on the phone, Julio Fuentes, Florida State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce head. Good to have you on there, Julio. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, and thank you for having me.
Let's start with you while we're in your neck of the woods on the phone. This whole question of immigration and what it means particularly for, and dare I use the term Hispanic community. Those of us who've been in Florida for any length of time know there is no such animal. But as far as the Hispanic Chamber is concerned, what are your concerns and what are, I guess, your policy positions when it comes to the current immigration debate, Julio?
Well, there's a couple of things on that front. Obviously, here in Florida, we have one of the most sizable immigrant populations in the United States, with a little over 19% of our state's residents having been born in foreign countries, and yielding so much opportunity for our congressional leaders to totally enact change to address our state's unique population. And, you know, we cannot afford to live with the current immigration system any longer. We know that it's broken. It's totally outdated. It has proven to harm rather than help the state of Florida. So we need to establish a balance between our economic prosperity and border security, which is why it is of the most important piece of discussions that we have in today's political arena, to pass common sense immigration reform while maintaining our country's security. So, you know, there's way too much debate going on about border security and making sure that our borders and our country is safe. And I have yet to come across one individual that disagrees with that. So, I mean, I think that's a good starting point in talking about border security, and obviously moving forward from there. That's one angle. Another angle is from an economic standpoint, and talking about the H-1B visa, which also is extremely, extremely outdated. We know we have a shortage in this country of talented individuals to fill the needs in what they call the STEM arena. So folks are coming here from all over the world. We are giving them a high quality education, and unfortunately, because of our current system, these folks are going back to their homeland or another country and using what we as a country have taught these individuals and taking their talents somewhere else, which is totally, just doesn't make sense at all. So, those are just two examples there, and the Florida State Hispanic Chamber has been working hard in getting this message out there.
You mentioned a term that seems to be in short supply right now, though, Julio, which was common sense. And for some folks, when it comes to this debate, common sense is round them all up and send them back and then hermetically seal the border so no more can get in. And the other side of that polarization is let's just have a path to citizenship for everybody and remove the immigration restrictions, the quotas, and everything that are in place. Sam Aguilar, if I can start with you, for Forward Florida, what is a middle ground between those two extremes?
No, so I think you did a great job of mentioning what those extremes are, right? On one end, we have people that are calling for a deport them all mentality, right? We have over 11 million undocumented people currently in the country, many of them right here in Florida. And sure, it is maybe a policy solution that we deport them all. Number one, it's going to be costly. Even the most conservative estimates have every single deportation at around maybe $5,000 to $8,000. So multiply that by millions and you can only imagine the cost we're talking about. Number two, you are tearing apart families. You're tearing apart communities. These are people that have been in the country for years, if not decades, right? Their children are going to school. They own businesses, right? They're members of church groups. So that would just be devastating for the communities that they're a part of. And then on the other side, right, there's, groups who some consider are calling for open borders and things like that, right? Well, Forward U.S. believes there needs to be a middle ground. And what that would look like is, number one, providing law enforcement with the measures they need to be able to secure our borders. Number two, finding a pathway to legalization for the undocumented community currently already in the country. And then number three is updating our legal visa reforms, which, like Julio said, some of these are, they haven't been updated since the internet was around, right? And we're looking at these visa systems that really are just severely hurting a lot of the businesses right here in Florida, particularly the tech communities that need the international talent to be successful.
I heard some of that discussion of the H-1B visa situation this morning on C-SPAN before I came into the station. And one gentleman who is in a high-tech field who essentially was compelled by his employer to train his replacement, a group of folks who had come to the U.S. from India to be trained by the people they were going to displace when they went back to India to perform that business at a lower cost. And I think, Cesar, that's where a lot of this animosity comes from when people say, oh, immigrants are taking our jobs. They're not talking about the little gal from San Salvador, let's say, who's working housekeeping at a local hotel. They're talking about the high-tech jobs. Mm-hmm. And how do you deal with that? How do you reform that whole work visa thing?
Well, I guess let's take a couple steps back, right? So I've been following this very intricate policy discussion for about 11 years, since the initial eruptions of the movements and the marches on D.C. and in New York City across the entire U.S.-Mexico border, right? And if you look at that first demonstration in D.C., had in and around something between 750,000 demonstrators to 1 million demonstrators, right? And this is pretty significant, right? Yet we still don't have a substantial immigration, any kind of substantial immigration bill or policy that isn't more than 50 years old, right? The reason why I bring this to surface, right, is because when you look at, throughout the conversation of history, when you look at the civil rights movement, right, and what MLK did, the Million Man March didn't have million men there, right? It had around, they say, somewhere between 60,000 to 150,000 people. But the difference was, is bold leadership, right? And I think that now organizations like Forward are starting to create a venue for leadership to create that catalyst, right? And so that's why I'm here. And now, to answer your point as far as, you know, what do you do with all of this talent and with these visas, right? The issue is we are approaching a possible lost renaissance. What do I mean by that? We, for some reason, the United States attracts the best and the brightest, right? Nikola Tesla, Albert Einstein, Elon Musk. For some reason, something about this country attracts that. And instead of us capitalizing on that and bringing them to the surface in society, we're telling them they need to leave, right? When you have valedictorians that can't get scholarships and have 5.0 GPAs, that's our loss. So at the core, we have to start looking at immigrants and their value and not as scapegoats. It's cool we can ameliorate things with like visas and policies, but it's time for us to have a real true discussion as to how we change that.
Let's finish that thought in just a moment after this break, right here on Perspectives. Don't go away. Here on Perspectives, we usually focus on some pretty localized kind of stuff, but here we are literally going international today as we try to wrap our hands and heads around a problem that is so multitudinous. In fact, we're going to talk about that in just a second. It's immigration, but it is not just one issue. It is a host of them, and they are interconnected in a very intricate fashion. And it's sort of like the old Gordian knot. That's why it is so difficult to peel apart without doing damage to one side or the other. You are invited to be part of the conversation, certainly at 414-1234-800-926-8809. Cesar Hernandez with Forward, U.S. Florida advocate, talking about the intricate interconnection there of immigration, not just one thing.
Correct. And I guess just to elaborate, as I was saying to you, is when you say immigration, like how do you solve immigration is almost the same correlation to how do you solve physics, right? Immigration has many moving parts, many different variables. And for us to actually solve what that policy labyrinth is we're going to have to break it apart and treat each and every single one of those variables as its own standing issue, right? From education to how do we secure our borders, talent retention, visas, et cetera, et cetera. And why I'm very proud to be here today is because you have organizations like Forward.us that are taking that approach, right? And that are building coalitions to be able to fashion a paramount immigration policy. And it's going to be a lot of heavy lifting. But as I said before, I've been following this for 11 years. And we're and not and, and really not any better shape than we were 11 years ago.
Let me ask you, Julio Fuentes, from the Florida State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce viewpoint. It has been suggested in some quarters that if American business and industry wanted to have comprehensive immigration reform, we would have had it 50 years ago. But in fact, American business and industry is addicted to cheap labor, and that is one of the big problems. What do you think?
Well, I mean, from a business standpoint, and obviously looking at someone's bottom line or looking at revenues or you know, from a budget standpoint, you know, reducing cost and is something that every business owner, any corporation, obviously looks at. But this notion of you know that this immigrant population is taking away jobs from you know American workers and is so far from the truth. And I think that's where we really have been working hard at the Florida State Hispanic Chamber, and that's why I'm happy to be part of this coalition and part of Forward.us, because changing that image, that perspective of what an immigrant looks like. I mean, we've heard through the campaign that, you know, they are illegals and they're murderers and they're rapists, and that kind of talk puts an image on someone's mind. And of course, there are bad apples on every tree, but the truth of the matter is, you know, these folks are coming here to work. They're coming here to provide a better means of life for their families. You know, I always like I was just down in Miami speaking on this topic, and you know, I mentioned these folks don't come here and go to the Fountain Blue beautiful pool at the hotel to sit back and sip pina coladas. I mean, they're here for a legitimate purpose. So, and from a business standpoint, I mean, here in Florida, we're home to nearly, you know, almost 4 million Florida residents, of which, you know, 1 in 5 people in this state were born abroad. You know, new immigrant business owners here in Florida generated almost 25% of all net business income. You know, you're talking in the billions, almost $13 billion back in 2010. And legal status for Florida's unauthorized workers would generate an additional $1.13 billion in tax revenues. And this is the number that really jumps out at me and creates 97,000 new jobs. So that is the image that we need to be putting in folks' mind, the value that we have here in front of us versus talking about them being rapists and murderers and gang members and so on and so forth. So just changing that dialogue and that image is so important in this discussion moving forward.
Well, as we do move forward, though, Julio, let's add David to the conversation here, because he, I think, is articulating some of what we just talked about from the other side, though. David, hi. Welcome to Perspectives.
Good morning. Thank you for having my call.
Yes, sir.
I just was curious. The gentlemen that are speaking on behalf of the coalition sound very well educated and probably are second-generation Floridians. My guess is probably Cuban Americans. And that's the kind of people that we are getting economic benefit for. However, as a sixth-generation Tallahasseean, I have seen Tallahassee and surrounding counties being dragged down by illegal aliens. Let's take Gadsden County, for example. We have a tremendous population of Hispanics due to the farming industry in Gadsden County, which used to provide jobs for locals, but the locals got on government welfare and did not need to work any longer when they're being paid to have children and cannot make more than they would working in the fields. What is the incentive to put them to work? Our hospital went bankrupt with a 17% collection rate due to mostly illegal aliens having births, which is over $10,000, and then walking out of the hospital never to be seen again, never paying the bills. We have opened it back up, and their collection rate is only over 25% at this rate now. Now, that is not sustainable, and the taxpayers are paying for it. Most of these people have come from countries where their own country has put them in that position. It is not the United States' fault that their country is degraded and run by dictators and tyrants. It is necessary understanding that we must educate our children to a higher standard, so they don't need to hire people from India to come in and teach chemistry at our high schools. We should be teaching it to a higher standard in our schools here.
Okay, well, David, let me let the guys respond here and see what thoughts they have, and as a rejoinder to the points that you're making. Sam?
Hey, David, I think you brought up some great points and good questions, and I hope I'm able to address all of them here. So first thing, I'm actually a first-generation Mexican immigrant and very proud of my heritage and the contributions my family and I have made here in the United States. And to your second point about jobs, so a quick anecdote. I was on a panel the other day, right? And the speaker asked the audience, who is the king of the jungle? And almost everybody replied, the lion, right? However, lions do not live in jungles, right? So where does everybody get this mentality from? Why was that everybody's immediate answer? It's because people repeat it so much, right? Similar to this perception that immigrants are stealing jobs or that immigrants are criminals. In reality, there's facts. You can Google this. You can look up the research that immigrants actually help their local economies by driving up wages. And actually creating more job opportunities, right? To think that immigrants, whether undocumented or legal, are taking jobs away from local economies is to have a sort of closed-minded, approach to a zero-sum sort of economy, right? It takes into consideration that there's only a certain amount of jobs, and then if an immigrant takes one, that's taking one away from a local-born person. However, when immigrants come into these economies, not only are they, you know, are they taking jobs, however, they're also driving up. They're driving up the economies, right? They're bolstering up these economies by adding to what the suppliers are going to need to be producing. Not only that, but, you know, immigrants are taking a lot of jobs that are being really the people here in the local economies are not taking. So I know from Georgia, whenever they passed a strict anti-immigrant bill in 2011, a lot of the immigrant community left and left to other states that were more welcoming to immigrants. The agriculture economy in Georgia suffered so badly that the governor at the time had to bring in inmates basically to go out and pick the fruits in the agricultural fields because there was nobody there locally that wanted to take the jobs and do that work.
Okay. Did you want to throw something in, Caesar?
Yeah, sure. So first I want to say I can tell that you're a very intelligent man. And the reason why I can say that is because based off of your observations, you were able to deduct certain conclusions, right? So that takes a certain level of intelligence. And because I know that you're such an intelligent person, I would like to utilize my exact approach in my introduction by breaking down every single one of your points into different variables and explaining as to how it is that that specific variable got to that point. So, for instance, the first thing that you talked about where they're coming in and they're taking up some of these farm jobs, now that's a policy issue, right? And so what the United States is seeing right now are some of the ramifications of policies that were put in place so that American companies will be able to outcompete Latin American small farmers. The irony of that is that now those Latin American small farmers, such as in Mexico, are now working those very same fields. So they're still doing their trade, which is farming, but since they can't compete with American industry or American companies that are selling it at a much lower cost, they come here. So the irony is they're just like me and you, just trying to make a living. Now, of course, there's going to be contributing members to society, and there's going to be members of society that are going to drain it. That's the same for all aspects and all elements throughout any type of society in any country. Now, another thing that you mentioned was the stabilization of their own home countries. Now, these are ramifications from the U.S. Truman Doctrine, which essentially enabled and enacted that in order for the United States to be secured and to be sound on an international level, they had to make sure that they were the most important superpower in the Western Hemisphere. So there was a lot of approaches, and they've actually started schools, and you can look this up, like La Escuela de las Americas, which essentially was a school created so that they would be able to teach agents to be able to go into countries so that they can protect the U.S. best interests. So, for example, I have a friend that works as a U.S. diplomat, and as I was looking at possibly being a diplomat, the first thing he told me was, Caesar, you have to understand, you're a patriot, you love your country, that's why you want to do it, but in a lot of instances, you're representing the best interests of the federal government, which isn't necessarily always the best interests of the American people. Now, the reason why I bring these things up to surface is because patriotism is like a marriage. Nationalism is like a marriage. You're going to say I do with, you're going to take all the good with the bad. So I'm not here to pick apart whatever American policy was in the past, but what I'm here to say is that that happened. Now, how do we move forward, form some kind of cohesiveness and some kind of collective vision, because the damage has been done. We're in this situation. How do we get out of this situation? If I'm down in the fourth quarter by 30 points, I'm not thinking about, man, we're terrible. There's no way we can come back. No, I'm thinking about what strategies can we get so that we can generate that W. And that's why we're having this dialogue right now, is to look at us as American citizens saying, hey, how do we come up to solutions with this moving forward? Because if not, ultimately, America loses. Why do I say America loses? It's because we've always been at the pinnacle of the world. So nobody has been able to solve this immigration labyrinth. Nobody. Europe has these problems. Africa, Asia, Latin America has these problems. You know, people from Nicaragua trying to get into Costa Rica, trying to get into Guatemala. This is a global issue. But since America attracts the best and the brightest, the people that are going to be able to actually come up with a solution are going to be here, and it's people like me and you.
Okay, let's see if we can add another possible solution provider to the mix. Elizabeth on line three. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi, thank you. I don't know about solutions. I just wanted to share my opinion or my feelings after listening to David. You know, I guess my family first moved here in the 1960s, and I've lived in both Leon County and Gadsden County, and you know, I guess I was fortunate because when I was 16, I was allowed the opportunity to study abroad, which changed my whole world view. And as someone who was raised in both Leon and Gadsden County, when I see Mexican families, or who I presume are Mexican families, you know, in the store or in the, you know, restaurant next to me, I like that. I don't see them as dragging down our area. I see them as adding diversity. And since that gentleman, David, spoke directly, he was speaking a lot towards Mexican people specifically, I would just like to say that all of my interactions with the Mexican people that I've interacted with have been that they're very respectful, hardworking, nothing negative at all. And, you know, you can't say that about a lot of people that are born and raised here. And another thing I wanted to say is that, you know, he referred to, made another comment along the lines of those people, you know, and not wanting to work. And I think, you know, we can all kind of make a judgment as who he was referring to. And it's just, you know, that type of language and the way he, you know, where his perspective and where he's coming from is, that's what I grew up with here my entire life. And, you know, like, and I'm sorry, I forget his name, the gentleman that was just speaking reference to. It's an issue of globalization. The world is changing. Donald Trump being president isn't going to change that. And all the issues that we have developed or that we have due to globalization are going to continue. And that's not going to go away. And like the gentleman was just saying, what we need to work on is finding a solution where we can work together, because we're all going to have to live here together, regardless of this current administration.
Terrific, Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, that's Cesar Hernandez, by the way. So
thank you. Sorry, I didn't catch that.
That's okay. I'm glad you guys know each other now. That's very cool. Thank you for your input. I really appreciate that, Elizabeth. When we talk about this, though, folks, we're also breaking down, and I'm keying off of something, Caesar, as Elizabeth did, that you said, that this is a international issue. This is something that has been endemic in the human form since forever, when the first tribes from over the mountain moved into our territory, and oh my gosh, are they going to do us harm, and we have to protect ourselves against them, even though they may be very, very friendly people. Let's start talking about what Forward.us is proposing as far as these baby steps moving forward, trying to address these various entanglements here. Sam, you want to tackle that? What's the first thing we got to do here?
No, so I think, you know, when people talk about immigration, especially in the current climate, a lot of folks, they're not very optimistic, right? With President Trump in power now in Congress, under the control of the Republicans, you know, people really don't think that there's a way to move forward with immigration policy. I'm an optimist, so I like to think the opposite. I think there have been some good signs recently. Number one, President Trump has repeatedly stressed support for protecting Dreamers who were brought to the country at a very young age at no fault of their own. So currently, there are proposals out there that would basically cement either a pathway to legal status or cement legalization for the Dreamer community. One of those is the Bipartisan Bridge Act, which is sponsored by it's in both houses currently. So it's sponsored by both Republicans and Democrats in the House and in the Senate. And it's exactly a pathway to move forward and cement the DACA program, which is a Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, into legislation and allow them to come out of the shadows and continue contributing to their communities. As far as other specific policy, I think we also need to be very careful and carefully study the effects of what restricting legal immigration would do for our economy. Specifically, you know, here in Florida, when we talk about the high-skilled economy, the high-tech economy, the high-tech corridor in Central Florida, you know, our cities like Tampa, Orlando, Miami, and Jacksonville will really be impacted by restricting legal immigration.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back and complete it on the other side of this break. You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, Talking Immigration. We'll be right back. Immigration, our topic on Perspectives on WFSU-FM, Sam Aguilar, Cesar Hernandez, and from West Palm Beach on the phone, Julio Fuentes with the Florida State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. All right, we're going through the baby steps here, solving the entanglement of immigration. We will not just call it a single issue. And Sam Aguilar, you said, number one, protect the Dreamers. Get some kind of policy in there. We're not going to round those folks up and send them to wherever. We are going to have some kind of pathway for them. Secondarily, here on the established immigration routes for folks to come in, whether it's the H-1B visa program, something to allow more people to come in to the United States for jobs on a legal basis. And again, how would that look different from what it is now?
So currently, our high-skilled immigration system is basically a, what they call a lottery program, right? So companies apply to bring in high-skilled talent that is not available currently in the United States. We're not graduating enough STEM graduates for these tech companies to be able to grow the way that they want to grow. So a tech company applies into this H-1B visa lottery, right? And they basically have maybe a 1 in 9, 1 in 10 chance of obtaining the talented coder or developer from India, China, or Europe that they need. And then even moving forward, once, let's say they are one of the lucky few that are able to get the talent that they need, moving forward, the process is very cumbersome for that new immigrant coming to America to be able to stay here, right? We currently have a green card backlog that's maybe over a decade long for some folks. And this is the legal immigration system, right? This is the line that people are talking about. So Forward US stands for expanding the high-skilled visa program to allow more tech companies to be able to get the talent that they need from abroad that's just currently not being produced here in the United States, and also fixing the green card backlog that would allow those high-skilled entrepreneurs and talented immigrants to stay in the United States, to bring their families here, to create their families here, to start businesses. You know, it could easily be the next Elon Musk, right? And we are possibly shutting our doors to tens and thousands of these people.
Because that was historically where so much of the drive, I'm thinking of a guy like Andrew Carnegie, Scotland, I think, was the place he called home originally. And so historically, throughout American history, you have had most of the entrepreneurs and the movers, the shakers, the drivers being part of the immigrant community.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so that's one and two. Where do we go for three? And Julio, let me get you in on this too. As far as the Florida State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is concerned, what do you guys want to see as far as a reform process on this entire matter?
Well, I mean, I could touch on two issues that we at the Florida State Hispanic Chamber support as well as Forward. And no need to rehash securing our borders. I mean, that's just a simple no-brainer that I think we all could be on the same page with. Another piece is employee verification. We strongly believe in the basic E-Verify system, which would identify any bad actors that want to, game the system or try to get certain employment without having the proper documentation, and while helping thousands of workers who are unemployed today. So E-Verify and other worksite enforcement activities will help our economy by opening up jobs and increasing wages, reducing job competition, and reducing any type of illegal workforce that we have. So I mean, those are two issues that we at the chamber, alongside with Forward, support.
All right, you bring up a really good point there, Julio, as far as the E-Verify system to make sure that those who apply for work are actually who they say they are. Does anyone have a handle on how many folks might be kicked out of that system to the point that they would not be able to get a job in this country out of the current a group of undocumented workers that we may have here?
I can't state specifically, but we do have an undocumented population of over 11 million. You know, the median age in that leans towards the younger side, right? So a lot of folks say that these are people that with the jobs that they do have, they're paying into Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid benefits that they will never receive, yet they're still, keeping some of these programs afloat. And so I think Julio made some great points in terms of security and E-Verify, which Forward does stand for. But I think that these have to come hand in hand with a process to legalize the people already here in the country, right? They are already in the workforce, right? If you kick them out, that's, ask any business owner. That is going to be a drastic loss for the local economy and for that specific business. So I think if we're going to talk about, whether it's building a wall or whatever in terms of security, then we really need to look at who's already in here and are we going to deport them, which we should do for, violent criminals and people who are just bad people and shouldn't be in the country. Or are we going to find a pathway for them to, pay back taxes, learn English, and, eventually, assimilate into broader American society and, give them a pathway to citizenship?
Because that has been, somewhat of a bone of contention too, when people say, "Oh well, those who came here undocumented, who I hate to use this term, snuck across the border. Many of them overstayed visas. Come on, but then should they be given a free pass to citizenship, or there should be some kind of, if not punitive action, at least some way for them to compensate their way into that citizenship category, right?"
Yeah, and I think what it comes down to is, we hear a lot of people say, "Oh, well, they should just get in line. They should do it the right way," right? So what Forward stands for is let's create that line. It currently doesn't exist. I promise you that. There is no line for an undocumented immigrant already living in the United States. So let's draft bipartisan policy to create that line, create that system, and then let them get in line.
And what do those folks do in the meantime, though?
Great question.
I mean, E-Verify said, I really can't have a job here. My employer might get dinged by the feds if he hires me, so I can't work there anymore. So do you create another great underground economy, or what do we do with these folks while they are waiting in line to get all the benefits after they pay back what they're supposed to of citizenship and full participation? Caesar?
Right. And the biggest contention is this word illegal, right? That's illegal. This is illegal. Some of the most foundational aspects of our union started off illegal, right? The Declaration of Independence was illegal. That was an illegal act against the crown. Our first fully American president was Martin Van Buren, which was the eighth president, right? All others before were born under the colonies, right? When Rosa Parks got up from behind the bus, that was an illegal act. When we decided to go to war and stop slavery, right? Slavery was legal at one point. Every single bold, contentious movement that we consider a part of America started off as an illegal act. And now it's become mainstream. What we're trying to do is try to come up with a policy issue, right? So look at a different approach, because ultimately it's like entropy. This is the direction that we're going in, right? You're going to go from an area of less randomness to an area of more randomness. And if we don't solve this issue, there's going to be other means, but it's going to happen. So what Forward is trying to do is saying, hey, let's circumvent all of this and let's actually come up with a substantive agreement, a substantive initiative to produce a policy which we can all agree upon, right? It's just the direction that we're moving in. So my big thing is when people start saying these terms, we shouldn't do that, we shouldn't do that. Well, if our founding father said, hey, we shouldn't create a new country, we wouldn't even be here at this moment.
We know that you got the Florida State Hispanic Chamber in with the coalition here, guys. Who else is on Forward.us? What other groups are you bringing in to help out in this whole effort?
So that's a great question. And it brings me to this point. What does the Florida State Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, the Orlando Regional Chamber of Commerce, a local Republican club right here in Tallahassee, have in common with blanking at the moment, but let's say a high-skilled tech company in Ocala, Florida? Almost nothing, you would think, right? Except they all firmly believe that our immigration system is outdated and broken, and they want to see something done about it, right? Forward US started in Florida with a fateful meeting in Orlando about a year ago. We got together in Orlando, hosted in a co-working space there with a very small group of people, and it was the state director for America's Voice, which is a national immigration group, Zoe Adams, which is a great advocate, a local advocate right here in Florida for high-skilled immigration reform and the reform of investor visas. Jim Thomas with the Orlando Regional Chamber and other, you know, local elected officials there. We got together, sat down, talked a little bit about Forward, our work across the country, and what we wanted to do in Florida. And every single person in that room said, okay, how do we do this? You know, how do we start engaging our members of Congress? How do we make this change happen? How does Florida become the leader in this immigration reform movement just because of the simple fact of our diversity right here in the state, right? And we decided, like, let's just bring everybody together. You go talk to five of your friends. You go talk to five of your friends. Let's bring in companies. Let's bring in faith leaders. Let's bring in the education movement. Almost everybody, you know, right here in the state of Florida can be convinced in one way or the other that they would benefit from common sense immigration reform, and it would be true. So it's just finding exactly how and explaining to people how they are impacted by our broken immigration system and how them, their company, their bottom line would benefit so much from expanding our immigration reform.
But as you were just saying, Sam and Caesar and Julio, you have to do this in a in a comprehensive but not all one swell swoop fashion, because you're never going to get the entire thing in one solid package. It's going to have to be in piece parts and bit by bit.
So that's what people, you know, think, especially in this political atmosphere now. But so in 2013, there was a comprehensive immigration reform bill that Forward supported that passed the Senate and never came up for a vote in the House. A lot of people think that it would have passed the House had it came up for a vote, but it never did. So we would like to see a comprehensive approach that fixes, you know, the entirety of our system at once. No, it's not going to be easy. It's going to take a lot of negotiation. It's going to take a lot of compromise. But at the end of the day, that's how we bring everybody together at one table, instead of a temporary Band-Aid fix for the farmers and then another temporary fix for the tech community, and just, you know, picking and winning the losers of our immigration system through piecemeal policy.
Okay. Julio Fuentes, you know the political landscape in Florida and elsewhere just about as well as anybody. Is this doable? Do we have the policymakers, the elected officialdom in place to actually make this fly?
I certainly believe so, and my colleague had mentioned this earlier that obviously this is not going to be easy, but it's organizations such as ours and Forward and many others throughout the country and here in the state of Florida that are coming together to talk about this and educating our elected officials. I think, unfortunately, this whole debate of immigration reform has been a political tool for way too long, and elected officials were scared to even touch it or even go there or just totally blank out on it, not willing to understand the economic benefits to their own backyard, to their constituents, to their state, and that's what gets me excited today is we have such a diverse coalition talking about this. It's no longer just your dreamers or your grassroots immigration reform advocates talking about this. I mean, you have everything from grassroots, grass tops, faith-based, small business, large business, different sectors of the business community, different industries, talking about the way that we should be talking about this, and obviously coming up with a solution that's going to benefit ultimately this these families and our economy and this great country that we live in. So I am totally optimistic in making sure that we bring more voices and more strength to the table to make this happen.
What about the electorate? Because it is so easy for political folks to use the electorate promising to do something, not doing anything at all, but yelling about it a lot. Because the moment you have to take an action on something, that you plant your foot somewhere and somebody's going to come after you. So the easiest thing is to say, our system is broken. It's horrible. It's terrible. It's the worst on the planet. And then you do nothing about it, but you use it as that political weapon against your opponents or just to get votes. So how do you get the people who elect those people engaged and involved? Sam?
Well, no, it's a great question. And, you know, there's studies and surveys that show that the American electorate, by a vast majority and even a majority of Republicans, support immigration reform policies, whether it's reforms to our high-skilled immigration system or finding a pathway to legal status for those currently in the country. I think the highest polling numbers, and I don't have them with me, don't quote me on this, but I think around 80 to 90% of Americans across the United States are against mass deportations. They know that's not going to work. They know that's not a real policy proposal. So I think our elected officials need to once and for all take the leadership to come together and solve this problem instead of using it as a political football, like you were saying. And I think Florida is ripe for that change. You know, we've seen Senator Marco Rubio in 2013 who took that charge. More recently, now we're seeing a Representative Curbelo down in Miami who is supporting legislation in favor of Dreamers, right? And yeah, I think, you know, the leadership is right here in our state to be able to grab this issue by the horns and make it happen.
Okay. Any thoughts you have, Caesar, on that?
I would say that the more complex issue here is that for the majority, although the American electorate is sensitive to this issue. It's not a topic of severe salience, right? So it's what removes them from voting for someone who's for immigration and being motivated past that to continue that, right? And allow me to make a comparison. Syria. I see these images of Syria. I'm angry. I'm flustered. I want to do something, right? Maybe I supported initiatives or people who ran for office who wanted to do something for Syria. In my mind, I did something, right? In my mind, I voted for people that would probably, that are in Congress, that would lobby the Foreign Affairs Committee to do something. I'm done. My job is complete. But how different would my motivation be if I have someone that's related to me that is Syrian, or if I'm living in Syria, or if I lived in Syria, saw the atrocities, came here, and I'm American? I'm going to be on fire, right, to want to change something. That's the difference. So I do not foresee this changing substantially until we see the children of the people that are most affected by this become of voting age to discuss exactly what their experience was to enact that change.
Got
to
make that personal, political.
Exactly.
Guys, thank you so much. Cesar Hernandez, Sam Aguilar from Forward U.S. Florida, and Julio Fuentes with the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Thank you all for being on Perspectives. Produced by WFSU-FM, and I'm Tom Plantey, and we'll see you next week right here on Perspectives. We'll be talking about reforming health care. We're just going crazy with the big issues right here on Perspectives.
Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.